Hello and welcome. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, coming to you on the 22nd of May 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to have you aboard. It's always a pleasure to be able to share information and to help the general effort of people around the world to come to grips with what is going on and to communicate what they know for the benefit of others. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. That, of course, is a quote by Martin Luther King. And it really is a central theme of, I think, the alternative media generally, that we have to encourage more and more people to speak out, to take action in whatever way they can about injustice. And where deceptions are occurring, where outright lies and deceptions are occurring, they have to be counteracted with the truth. Today I want to focus once again on a really, really central issue of focus with this show that has been going with us since we began, about people's rights in regard to their health and the use of medicines and vaccines specifically. Because we have a situation in Australia developing where the fascist corporate elitists are trying to railroad us into compulsory medical procedures. They're trying to make it impossible for people to avoid getting their kids vaccinated. It's a complete betrayal of the concept of a free society. It's a complete undermining of democracy. It really is so much more than simply a question of whether vaccines are effective or not, which is a very important debate. But the bigger debate and the bigger threat here is that the arguments that are being used to enforce compliance are these same old, tired old, greater good arguments. You have to do it because it's for the benefit of everyone else. And if you don't, we're going to make your life virtually impossible. This argument is the argument of tyrants. And let's just even put aside the questions about the efficacy of vaccines. Let's say vaccines are effective, as claimed. This is another question, though. This is about people's freedom, right? People's freedom perhaps to be wrong. Maybe I disagree with vaccines. Maybe I'm wrong. Now, I think I should be free to be able to be wrong. I don't want to hurt anyone. I'm not impinging on anyone. But the powers that be have redefined the meaning of harm. You see, if you don't get your kids vaccinated, you are now harming other kids. Your absence of taking an action is now harming other kids. They've actually redefined the meaning of harm. Now, we can't allow them to do that. We can't allow them to subvert language, because if we do, we fall into the very future that was predicted by George Orwell in the book 1984. And one of the worst aspects of that dystopian world which he depicted, and which he often talked about in his essays, was the undermining of language. The undermining of language is actually central to the way in which full-blown tyranny starts to make itself manifest. I mean, think about in fascist Europe, in Nazi Germany, there was endless political talk about how Germany had to protect itself from its enemies, how it was being harmed by the existence of these degenerate influences in the society, including racial groups who were regressive or dangerous to the genome. And this was the essence of eugenicist philosophy. So merely allowing a Jew to breed, or even worse, to interbreed with another race, was considered a harm that had to be prevented. And people believed this. See, this redefining of language worked. And they were able to pass laws which now are seen as completely unjust and completely outrageous. Well, I propose to you that the laws that they are now proposing in regard to enforcing vaccination are equally outrageous and equally will be seen in the future as incredible. How did we ever allow it to get this far? Now, I'd like to read to you from an article that was published just a couple of days ago in the Daily Telegraph. Labor's support for No Jab, No Play campaign forces Liberal rethink. New South Wales Labor opposition leader John Robertson has swung behind the No Jab, No Play campaign and will introduce legislation into the Parliament on Tuesday that will allow preschools and childcare centres to ban unvaccinated children. Mr. Robertson's move this week has forced a red-faced health minister, Gillian Skinner, to play catch-up, saying the O'Farrell government would consider strengthening laws to allow childcare centres to ban unvaccinated children. So this is quite an interesting scenario, ladies and gentlemen. The opposition is introducing legislation and dragging the government along with it. This is the state government, not the federal government. I mean, normally the government of the day introduces legislation, right? But in situations where you have incredibly co-opted groups and subject areas that are controlled by money and power and influence, they simply drag any politician into it. The forces that are at work here, the people that are doing this, have politicians under their thumb, and they will get what they want. Now, some background here, and I have been discussing this in previous shows, but for those who are unaware of the context here, there have been claims made that vaccination levels in Australia have dropped to alarmingly low levels. Now, indeed, vaccinations have dropped, and research has shown that the main groups who are not vaccinating their kids are actually quite well-off people, as well as people living in areas where there are a lot of alternative-thinking people, such as in the northern New South Wales area around Byron Bay, but also in places like Vaucluse in Sydney, which is probably the richest suburb in Sydney, and a very high proportion of people professional, very high proportion of people would be doctors in a place like that. It's fascinating, isn't it? And Vaucluse is one of the lowest compliance areas in Australia. But this is now being reframed. This is being reframed as actually people who are ignorant, who simply haven't kept up with the vaccination schedules. They're lazy, they're ignorant, and they haven't vaccinated their kids. You know, somehow I don't think those people in Vaucluse are doing it for that reason. But let's actually read, continuing here from the article. A recent report revealed that almost 80,000 children are unvaccinated, with up to 9 areas showing immunisation rates below 85% and risking outbreaks of preventable diseases. Mr. Robertson said that some third world countries had higher immunisation rates than Vaucluse. It is astounding that places like Iran and Sudan have higher rates of childhood vaccination than parts of Sydney. Well, okay, I want to just break that down a little, because you know something? A lot of these places where the World Health Organization comes in, they just people don't have any choice. I mean, they just move through like it's a military operation. They arrive with all their equipment. It's a huge event. And these people who live in these countries have very little resources. They're very poor people. They can hardly refuse. I mean, they're being told they've been given something wonderful. They have no way to check on it. They have no resources to know, to check, to examine, to determine whether, in fact, this is really medicine, whether it is really good. And for the most part, they simply do it because they think they've been given something wonderful for free. Now, what this article doesn't mention is that, in fact, in Afghanistan, it's quite different. They didn't mention Afghanistan in the article. In Afghanistan, the Taliban have been actually killing the vaccine crews here and there. Because, in fact, it turned out that some of the vaccination squads were actually working with the CIA. They were actually fronts for intelligence-gathering operations. But more than that, it has been discovered by the local people in Afghanistan that the vaccines are, in fact, injuring children. And this has come out. And I assure you that vaccines are not regarded quite as openly and with such friendly regard as you might think from reading this article in Afghanistan. Now, just returning to the article here. It says the vast majority of unimmunized children are not the children of vaccine refusers, but rather their parents have forgotten to keep up to date with the childhood immunization schedule, and the bill aims to target those. Now, of course, that's just an assumption. That's a bald-faced assumption, which has apparently nothing behind it other than that's what he says. You have to believe that. Utter rubbish. Indeed, it's just propaganda. Bear in mind, dailytelegraph.com.au, owned by the Murdoch Empire. Murdoch Empire has massive vested interests in vaccines. And that can be substantiated, and I will dig up the notes for that. I think I've mentioned it in previous shows. Continuing here, it says, last week, federal opposition leader Tony Abbott said an Abbott-led government would support childcare centres' right to turn away children who are not immunised, and it would also review benefit payments to vaccine refusers. So, in fact, we see the chorus now from the federal government all joining in. We all want to be part of this. We're all together in this because we're all completely under the thumb of one big giant cartel. Just one big company owns us all. It's like all joined together with all the big pharmaceutical companies and the military industrial complex. And you know, they set the agenda for what we will do, what we will think, and we will force people to buy their products. We will force people to take their medicines, and we'll try to do it through propaganda. We will try to do it through advertising. We will try to do it through manipulation. But if that doesn't work, we will start to use other means. This is the scenario we're in. This is the situation. This is, ladies and gentlemen, is why we have to speak out. Our lives begin to end the day we stop speaking out about things that matter. Bear that in mind. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life, growing strife.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We can be found on the internet at truthnews.com.au. Check us out, get our podcast, listen to the live feed if you like. You can get that on Logos Radio Network, and there are links there from the live show. And you can always send me an email. My name's Herriwood Fenton, and I run this show pretty much on my own. I often have guests on. I haven't had guests for a while, hoping to do a number of good interviews in the next few weeks. But if you're interested in coming on the show, I'm very interested in talking to you if you've got some original perspective on any topic. And you can always send me an email to editor@truthnews.com.au. Now, I'm just going to continue here reading from this article from the Daily Telegraph. It's quite a tour de force of propaganda and misinformation, this article, and it's clearly been written with a very, very deliberate agenda to basically mess with people's heads in terms of their understanding of why it is that people aren't getting vaccinated at the rates that they used to be, why people are questioning it, why a lot of people are saying no, and why indeed a lot of the wealthier people in our communities are saying no. And they're attempting to gloss over this fact and completely sort of refusing to even look at the question of why is it that it's these more affluent people who are not getting the jab, acting that, well, that's just a coincidence, so it's just the people that are ignorant. Well, surely if it was just the people that were ignorant, it would be across the board, and it would tend to be more clustered in the uneducated people, probably a lot of the immigrant people, a lot of the people way out in the western suburbs who have trouble with English. Surely if it were simply a question of ignorance, it would be among those communities. I mean, I'm not saying that rich people are smarter. I certainly don't agree with that view. But the wealthier people in our society have better access to information, resources, and they tend to be better educated, you know, just on a basic level. So the question of why the wealthier people are turning down vaccines is being completely glossed over in this Daily Telegraph article, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to continue now reading from it. They're now addressing the question of, or the subject of, people who are spreading information about dangers in vaccines. And the heading here is, "No wonder parents get confused." Bondi nutritionist Debbie Orme has defended her shopfront promotion of an epidemic in childhood autism, saying she is not against vaccination, with a variety of books highlighting a now discredited links between vaccination and autism in her store. Ms. Orme has said her concern is for safe immunisation. Bondi was identified in a recent report as a place where rates of vaccination are declining. So it looks like a Debbie is to blame. Would seem that way, wouldn't it? From her store, Ms. Orme loans customers a DVD titled Finding the Words, which claims to show children who developed regressive autism after they were administered vaccinations, who then recovered from their autism after undergoing a program of detoxification, immune support, and targeted education therapies. But Westmead Children's Hospital paediatrician David Isaacs said the DVD was very weak scientifically and featured holistic paediatricians who are just a bit nutty. So there you have it. That's the rebuttal there from paediatrician David Isaacs. I'd like to know what his stock portfolio is. Be very interested to know what his stock portfolio is and what his vested interests are. Of course, he's in a very high-paid job. That would be one vested interest, but I would suspect there would be others. And he says that the holistic pediatricians are a bit nutty. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's all you're going to get. That's the proof from the expert, the scientist, the doctor, the man you can trust, the man in a white coat. He says the people who are encouraging questions and caution about vaccines are just a bit nutty. So, continuing from the article, Ms. Orme claimed that the rise in autism in our society is due to increased toxicity and decreased nutritional status. And a quote here from Ms. Orm says she believes that one of the contributing factors, and a major contributing factor, is toxicity, and that one of the sources of toxicity can be vaccinations. But the doctors there said it was just nutty, so that's it. We don't think anymore. This is the sort of journalism we're faced with here. Of course, the Daily Telegraph is a gutter rag, we know that, but it is the most popular newspaper in the country. It is the most widely read newspaper in the country. It is extremely influential, unfortunately. Now, I'm just going to skip ahead to another section of the article which talks about the AVN, that's the Australian Vaccination Network. The Murdoch Press and the press generally in Australia and the mainstream television love attacking this organisation, run by a lady by the name of Meryl Dorey, who's been on this show a couple of times. Their goal is simply to educate people, to provide alternative information. They stipulate that this is not medical information. She is not a doctor. She is not giving you medical advice. But the government and the cartels are intent on shutting down the AVN. And, of course, the Daily Telegraph is all too keen to help in that. And they're now put into this article a rather nasty little swipe here at the AVN. It says here, the AVN is engulfed in a fresh controversy with the Therapeutic Goods Administration by promoting a cancer cure that medical experts say is dangerous. The product Black Salve, which contains highly corrosive poisons that can burn layers of skin and leave scarring, was advertised on the Australian Vaccination Network as an alternative cancer treatment. Now, we've covered this before on Truth News, and we know that there was an action against the group, but there was no advertising. We know there was no advertising. There was a DVD that was sold through the website. So, in other words, you could buy the DVD through the website, but construing that as an ad, I think, is completely wrong. It simply wasn't an ad. It was simply that she was providing the DVD for sale. Advertising has a specific meaning, ladies and gentlemen. And what is an ad? An ad is something where someone pays you to put information up to promote something, right? Meryl Dorey was simply on selling the DVD. Just a small point, but an important one. Now, continuing here from the article. The ad proclaimed Black Salve as a safe, effective, natural remedy used for over 2,000 years to treat skin cancers and other cancerous conditions, leading to a total remission of the disease. Well, that may, of course, been the promotional information on the DVD. It's very hard for me to say. I don't know for sure. But I do know that Meryl Dorey has insisted that she was not advertising Black Salve on her website. The TGA said, consumers would be entitled to expect that Black Salve will cure them of cancer when in fact there is no credible, reliable, clinical or scientific evidence to demonstrate that the product is effective in the treatment of any cancer. Well, that is palpably false. That statement is completely ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen. There are thousands of testimonials on the internet by independent people, often with photographs, often where they've documented day by day what happens with Black Salve when you put it on a growth, particularly a skin growth, right? And it burns them away. It works. I mean, that's just an outright lie to say that there is no evidence. Well, they say there's no scientific evidence. Well, the point is the scientific fraternities have turned their back on this because they're controlled by the commercial cartels. They won't look at it. It's that simple. Terry Sleven, chairman of the Skin Cancer Committee for the Cancer Council of Australia, said the product didn't work and it was illegal to sell the product because it's dangerous. Yes, well, think about chemotherapy, ladies and gentlemen. How safe is that? You know, how safe are all the therapies that are regularly given to people with cancer who often die anyway? You're with Truth News Radio. It's great talking to you. We'll be right back after this short break.
man is so unjust. Children, yeah, don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Great to be with you today. Well, you know, there are a number of themes that continually cycle around and around in this show, and certain subjects, certain topics, certain conflicts around the world, because they are the foci of disinformation, they are the foci of propaganda. And when you look at those conflicts, when you look at those situations, you see the machinations of this this kind of dark force that is actually controlling world affairs at the moment. And just as much as you see it with the manipulations over vaccines, as we said there in the previous segment, you see it in the manipulation of entire zones of the world, geopolitics and threats of war and undermining of sovereign governments with massive loss of life and really, really horrendous effects on people's way of life, people's well-being. And of course, one of those major flashpoints at the moment is Syria, and I often talk about Syria on this show. And I've had the Syrian girl, as she's known on YouTube, on my show several times in the past. I am hoping to get her on again for another interview, but I do actually have a clip here of a recent interview she did covering the current situation in Syria and why it is that the subtleties of it, because indeed she is not saying that that Assad is perfect. She's not saying that she's even a supporter of Assad, the president of Syria, but she is trying to draw attention to the way in which the information we're getting has been skewed, and trying to basically restore balance and sanity in the way we look at the country of Syria. And I'll just play that clip for you now, and hopefully it will enlighten you further on the situation that is taking place in that country.
Well, I think in the Western media portrays Syria as only two sides, pro-government supporters and anti-government fighters that support a militant uprising. But really, there's a large silent majority in Syria that want to see a reform process. They don't want to see the country descend into chaos, for the army to collapse, for outside forces to interfere inside Syria. And we recognize the corruption inside the government. We recognize that a lot of people have a legitimate reason to oppose the government. However, we do not agree that fighting on your own people is a solution, nor accepting weapons from the West, who have traditionally not supported Syria's claim to return of her sovereign land in the Golan Heights.
So do you in fact fear that if Mr. Assad is removed as president, that other forces will come into play and that Syria's integrity as a sovereign nation could be under threat?
Assad is a symbol for Syria's sovereignty. He is keeping the army intact. If he were to fall, it would be a sign of weakness and would cause a chain reaction of defections, of people running away from the front lines. So he needs to stay on and see this through. I mean, even people who are against him and have been ardent opposition to him for decades, my family being one of them, see this as a fact. And without Syria's defenses, it is very likely that there's going to be interference from outside.
Who do you fear most would interfere with the internal affairs of Syria?
You can say this simultaneously, Israel and the US, because Israel has been the border enemy to Syria for the last, you know, since its inception. And they say that rebel groups in Syria could become a future threat, which would be a reason for them to reoccupy. So they're already
planning. Well, the view of many people is that there is such a disorganization and so many rival factions on the rebel side, and some of those rebels are clearly groups who would pose a significant threat to Israel, but also to other Western nations because of their extremist views and potential links to Al-Qaeda.
Well, the problem is that the U.S. has created al-Qaeda in the 80s in Afghanistan. They've been funding it since then.
But not
and
now.
They pretend, well, al-Qaeda is seen as, you know, America's worst enemy. It, wherever al-Qaeda is, America has an excuse to attack. The way I see it, al-Qaeda is just like another WMD. You know, wherever the U.S. needs to impose its hegemony and imperialism, that's where al-Qaeda is going to be. If they need to support them, like they did in Libya, like they are doing now in Syria, like they do in Afghanistan, they will support them. When they need them as an excuse to for war, like they are doing in Mali now, that's what will happen. And I think that, you know, al-Qaeda might pose a threat to regular people inside the populations of America and Britain and Europe, but the threat to a military or a government or the...
But isn't that what in a democratic country the government has to do, is protect its own people? That is their main function, to protect their people from organizations that seek to harm those people.
Well, that is their function, and I think that when there is an outside threat, that's a great excuse to take people's liberties and to enforce more control over their private lives. And also, that is, of course, one of the other agendas that government have to control.
But are you denying that al-Qaeda is a threat to the West?
No, not at all. I would say that it's a controlled threat to the West.
You said that what you would fear is that if President Assad was removed, that Syria would descend into chaos. The picture we're given outside Syria is that it is already a country in chaos. How much worse could things get?
Well, you know, for one thing, the sectarian violence has been only on one side, really. Up to this point, the sectarianism against the Alawite minorities and the Christians has been from the FSA side. And you could say that when the militias take over, it could be both sides being sectarian. Without the army there, the biggest escalation would be foreign intervention. And that's when you're going to have more thousands and thousands die. That's,
but some people listening to you say that will say, well, on one hand, that makes sense for you as a Syrian to say that. But it seems also that you might be saying it's fine if it's only Syrians killing each other. What we don't want is foreigners coming in or exacerbating sectarianism. But we will put up with the current level of suffering as long as it's only Syrians fighting Syrians.
I would like an end to all fighting inside Syria, especially Syrians fighting Syrians. It's breaking the country apart. My way forward is through reform, is through dialogue. But
there seems to be no sign of dialogue, particularly between President Assad and the different rebel groups. I mean, attempts at dialogue have fallen down.
Well, dialogue is in their interests, because the alternative for dialogue for the Syrian government would be total destruction of their state. You see the U.S. block the Syrian National Council from pursuing dialogue with
How did they block it?
Well, if their leader, who is now stepped down, Mawaz al-Khatib, said that he agreed to dialogue with the government, and then a day later, he was changed totally his tune. Syrian National Council has, or whatever they are calling it now, has never agreed to dialogue with the government.
The image being portrayed, particularly in the Western media, of President Assad is a man who is determined at whatever cost to remain in power, and he seems to be, or he is portrayed as being, oblivious to the suffering of the people in cities like Homs and Aleppo.
I can't comment for him. I would say that people are suffering. They are being caught in the crossfire in Damascus due to the terror bombings, and in the FSA-controlled areas due to the fighting between the army and the FSA. I know people who have been in rebel-controlled areas that want the army to come in, even at cost of their own livelihoods in their homes, because they don't want to live under the FSA, who has been in. Some of them have been more brutal and more repressive than the government has been. But, of course, there are supporters of the FSA in these areas, and there are civilians being killed. It's a war, and they outside countries, specifically NATO, have fueled this war. It's a terrible
thing.
But
so many countries, I mean, Jordan, Lebanon, Israel, the USA, Britain and France, other EU states are saying the level, that more than a million people now displaced from Syria, people in desperate situations, you know, video emerging of seemingly whole villages wiped out.
We'll just have to leave it there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I hope you enjoyed that interview there with Syrian girl Mimi Al-Aham, who is a great, passionate advocate for truth and integrity in Syria. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go away. Welcome back to the show. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it appears that global warming has slowed down a little. It's still getting warm, but it's not getting as warm as it was getting. But despite that, it's still going to get warm pretty much as we've been told. It's just going to get warm slower. Now, if that confuses you, join the crowd. It confuses me. In fact, everything about climate change science confuses the hell out of me. And this latest news report, we have an article here from The Age, and I'm sure this is being repeated all around the world and all the major news rags. Warming to take longer in reaching forecast levels. The rate of global warming caused by rising greenhouse gas levels could be slower than previously thought, but will still result in the same eventual higher temperatures as earlier forecast, new research has found. Modelling by an international team of climate scientists has found that despite lower rates of global warming over the past decade, previous estimates of long-term temperature rises of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere can still be expected. Oh dear, I think I may have misread that. Let me try reading that again. Modelling by an international team of climate scientists has found that despite lower rates of global warming over the past decade, previous estimates of long-term temperature rises if carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is doubled can still be expected. Okay, that's actually a bit of a mouthful. And I actually misread it the first time because I thought the if was actually an of. But, you know, I found this with a lot of articles about climate change is that they seem to have tongue twisters in them that really are hard to read and understand. Let me just actually break down that paragraph because they're saying that despite lower rates of global warming, previous estimates can still be expected if carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is doubled. If. There's a big if in there, right? And doubled is a lot, right? Doubled would mean going from what is now around 400 ppm to about 800 ppm. Okay. Well, gee, that's a lot. I hadn't really heard any predictions that would happen anytime soon. I mean, that's a very confusing paragraph. It says that if carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is doubled, then previous estimates can be expected. But it is found that there are now lower rates of global warming. The latest findings published in the journal Nature Geoscience were drawn using complex climate models developed for the next major report of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And there's some photographs here of smokestacks pumping out water vapor, which of course Water vapor is a major greenhouse gas, but of course we don't limit water vapor. We do not tax water vapor. We don't do anything about water vapor. It's more or less completely ignored, ladies and gentlemen, when water vapor really is the major greenhouse gas on this planet. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that fascinating? I mean, why isn't there a tax on water vapor? Can someone please explain? Anyway, returning to the article. The team, which included CSIRO researcher John Church, says that the rate of average warming has been lower over the past decade than previous periods. Some argue that this could require lowering long-term estimates of global temperature rises from a doubling of the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from pre-industrial levels. But the group's modelling, using the most recent warming and ocean heat data, found that the expected long-term temperature increase is consistent with earlier estimates. In other words, everything's changed, but it's all still the same. We were wrong, but we're actually right. We've never been at war with Oceania. We've always been at war with Eurasia. We're just moving the goalposts, ladies and gentlemen. It's really frustrating, isn't it, dealing with this, as we have to when we want to counteract propaganda. The study says a doubling atmospheric carbon dioxide would lock in a likely 2-degree rise in average global temperatures over time. They keep talking about doubling the carbon dioxide, but that seems to have just dropped in out of the clear blue sky, this doubling of the carbon dioxide. I hadn't really heard that talked about a lot before in the news reports. Of course, carbon dioxide has been increasing according to some measures, including the main one followed by the IPCC, which is the Mauna Loa Observatory. But as I mentioned in last week's show, there are a number of other ways of measuring carbon dioxide. And some of those other techniques have shown that carbon dioxide levels fluctuate. They don't just go up or down. They go up and down. And they varied tremendously over the last century. Anyway, it says here, early estimates forecasted a 1.9 degrees rise, but the group has found that estimates of the immediate temperate response to rising greenhouse gases may need to be revised down, meaning warming could be occurring slower than expected. In other words, we're wrong, we got it wrong, but we don't want to admit it, so we're going to wrap that in a whole pile of weasel words to make it sound like it isn't what it really is, but in fact the whole story and the news report itself is saying that global warming has slowed down. Now let's have a look at what Joanne Nova has to say about this. I've got a recent article here from joannenova.com.au. Title here is Major 30% Reduction in Modelers' Estimates of Climate Sensitivity. Skeptics were right, in brackets. Now she says here, finally the modellers are catching up with the slowdown or pause in global warming over the last decade. Where the best estimate for the IPCC was a 3.3 degrees centigrade with a range of 2.0 to 4.5, Otto et al. Have revised the best estimate to 2 degrees centigrade with a range of 1.2 to 3.9. Effectively, the power of CO2 to warm just got 30% less, according to a team of researchers, many of who have in the past published more alarming papers. It says here, Otto looked at the global energy budget, which means adding up atmospheric, ice, continent, and ocean energy. They compared it decade by decade since 1970 and argue that the long-term equilibrium temperature response needed to be revised down. The oceans are taking up more heat than anyone thought. Or, says Joe, given how little we know about the oceans, it could be that that sneaky energy is tripping off to outer space. Well, anyway, I do recommend having a look at Joanne Nova's detailed coverage of this. It appears that there is some backpedaling going on. Agreed, it's being done extremely grudgingly. They're not admitting it. It's not out in the open, but they have to report on it. Unfortunately, the very mechanisms that they've set up with the government and media outlets require that these types of stories do get out. We'll know more about it. It'll probably be counteracted by more scary, alarmist reports in the near future. Now, I've just got a little morsel of news here in regard to Julian Assange, which I would like to share with you. It turns out that some information has emerged that shows that British intelligence believed that Julian Assange had in fact been framed in the Swedish sex scandal, where of course he is apparently wanted for rape, although it is not actually rape as defined in the English language. It is a translation of a term which is not clear what it actually even means in Swedish, but it is something like sexual molestation, but it is reported as rape regardless by the despicable global cartel-controlled media in order to make him look like some evil pervert. But it turns out that Julian Assange, is believed to have actually been framed by British intelligence. And this is an article published in the Telegraph, actually, from the UK, Telegraph UK. The founder of WikiLeaks, who has spent almost a year in the Ecuadorian embassy in London to avoid arrest and extradition to Sweden, claimed that he discovered a chatter between employees at GCHQ in which they speculate over his fit-up. In an interview with Spanish television program Salvados, broadcast on Sunday, Mr. Assange said that he had accessed unclassified instant messages between GCHQ employees discussing his case using a subject access request. Mr. Assange read out one message dating from September 2012. They are trying to arrest him on suspicion of XYZ. It is definitely a fit-up. Their timings are too convenient right after Cablegate. No further detail was given about who exactly wrote the instant message. Now, the authenticity of this information has actually been confirmed. I have a quote here from a representative of GCHQ. We can confirm who responded formally to the subject who made the request. The disclosed material includes personal comments between some members of staff and do not reflect GCHQ's policies or views in any way. Yes, but they simply reflect the views of the people who work there, which I think is a very important, although small, development. It shows that that the idea that Julian Assange was actually framed, that he was set up, is not as ridiculous as many have claimed. I mean, logically, it seems like that's probably what occurred. Anyway, we're going to break. Do stay with us for hour two. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be back for the second hour after this break.